Very clearly, when we look at the readings, the language of water and the metaphor and the actual conversation involves real water as well. So water is a constant theme in all three readings there, and even in St. Paul's letter to the Romans, he talks about being poured into our heart, the Spirit of God being poured into our heart. So it's the language of the wet, if you like. And most of you would be aware that Palestine, Israel, is not unlike a lot of places in Australia. And as we have been praying through the drought, they too know the value of water and how important it is and how it has to be very, very carefully managed. There would be no Palestinian children growing up having water fights. It just was not enough water around. So a very valuable resource. Now, the incident with the woman at the well, lots of things in Scripture, in the Old Testament particularly, all take place at the well. It's a very common place. And so it's a meeting place. It probably didn't actually occur. It's only in John's Gospel, and I'm not saying that to scandalise you, because I always like to find out, you know, why is it there in this particular place? And we have John's Gospel this week, next week, and the week after, before we head into Palm Sunday, which will be from Matthew's account of the Passion. So John's the only one that records this, and he puts it in this particular place fairly early in the Gospel. The other reason why I would say that it's probably not an actual event, but it is an instrument that John is using to draw us into a deeper conversation and relationship with God, is because most of the surface things that are there, the elements of this event, really wouldn't have taken place. You would never have a woman at the well, because it was a women's task to draw water to take back to the home. You would never have a woman in the well, at the well rather, in the middle of the day. They did that early, and then they did that in the evening. Never in the middle of the day. Unless, of course, she chose to go in the middle of the day to avoid meeting the other women, because we're getting this idea that she's now gone through five husbands, and she's got a spare that's keeping her company at the moment, but he's not really her husband, we're told. So she's probably got a reputation, and she may have wanted to keep a distance from people who would want to harm her in some way. That's possible. It's most unlikely also that a woman would actually talk to a strange man, let alone being a Samaritan. That wouldn't happen. It wasn't allowed by custom to happen. And then, furthermore, she then goes back into the town. So the well, Jacob's well, was out of town. So she's gone back into town to talk to a whole bunch of other men, because the women wouldn't have been in the centre of the town at the middle of the day. They're not allowed. So it was only the men. So she's gone back and spoken to a whole lot of men and told them this stuff, and they have believed her and then returned out to meet Jesus. So the lay of the land, it's kind of the wrong person in the wrong place at the wrong time to be an authentic story. But there must be something about it that was important for John's community. And remembering that John wrote his gospel many years after Mark and Matthew and Luke. So if it was a big incident, and we have no record in what we call the synoptic gospels, Mark, Matthew and Luke, we have no record of Jesus performing any Samaritan ministry. So I'm just saying that the evidence isn't there. So what is there? Why would it be there? Why would John put it in there? And then how does that relate to us today? So he's put it in there for his community, what we call the Johannine community. And he's not putting it in there to give some gender balance to the scriptures. He may be putting it in there to say that in following Jesus, you do not follow the old customs. The old days are past. Now, that's a genuine tactic that John may have used. All of the old rules and regulations, they don't apply. Those rules that did damage women and damage the poor, particularly widows. And we know from the fact that it was Jesus who broke all of the cultural norms, or so many of them. Not completely. She calls him sir. He calls her woman. So they're not all completely broken. And Jesus was a practicing Jew who had all of the heritage and all of the culture of Judaism. But he was able to see beyond the letter of the law, as it were, and he lived the spirit of the law. And that's probably what John is wanting to do. So if we look at the language that is in there, we look at water. And it's all about water. In the first reading, it is the Jews who ask God for water. When we get to the gospel, Jesus is the Son of God. We have God asking the people through this woman for water. Different conversation altogether. So St. John is trying to make a point here, and the point is all to do with using water, certainly as the metaphor, but it is the Spirit that is so important. God is Spirit. Those who worship God do so in spirit and in truth. And he says that twice. So if you substitute water and the imagery of water into where we hear the word spirit, we are starting now to get close to why John put it in there and how it applies to our life. So we don't say in the name of the Father, Son and the Holy Water. We don't do that. But when water is used in Scripture, it means a lot more than getting wet. It means a lot more than being clean and sanitized, word of the week. It means a whole lot more than just having your thirst quenched. A whole lot more. Because water was so valuable. And even as we move into the Eucharist itself, water is used in a way that highlights this conversation and the importance of living in the Spirit and in truth. We come to this altar where in a moment I will place a tiny drop of water made by God into the chalice with the wine, which is made by men and women. So the divinity meets the humanity in this chalice, on this altar. I will then turn and I will wash my hands. And then I say the words, Lord, wash away my iniquity and cleanse me of my sins. And then you come to communion with me around this altar because we have received in our baptismal water the Spirit of truth. And John is trying to reiterate that, to remind his audience and therefore to remind us that because the Spirit entered our life, the Spirit is the soul of God. It is living water. It's not like the water that was under the house that they had, because they only ever had water in like lakes. They had water in cisterns, which were under a house when it rained for those 3 months of the year. They could keep it there, but that water would go stagnant in time. And so what they did actually to get rid of the stagnancy, if that's a word, was they would put wine with it. Always more water than wine, but they would put wine in their cistern water to take away the horrible taste of the stagnant water, and they also thought that it killed whatever bugs or whatever going around. And then we're told in the Gospels that as Jesus died on the cross, water and blood flowed from his side. Every time we hear water, we think of the Spirit, and it's living water. Don't think of an ice cube in a glass. Think of what happened with the water at your baptism and at my baptism. And now during Lent, I say, as I come to communion, am I stagnant or am I living water? Is this Spirit alive in me, this Spirit of truth? Is it actually alive and active in me, or is it still in the cistern? And Lent, we have to get out of the cistern, if you like, and be living, active witnesses to what water truly is in the spiritual sense. It is the sign of life. It is the sign of cleanliness. There's no doubt about that. It is the sign that we are one with God in our spirit. It's what unites us. So from the little drop of water into the wine, to me washing my hands, remembering your baptism, it is that that allows us to come to communion together. It is the Spirit of truth that unites us. A journey that started at baptism and then is revisited every time we come here to communion. It is the Spirit of truth that draws us forward. That is truly living water. You're not sitting back there and then punching a 4-digit code into an ATM to get Jesus distributed to you. You come forward. There's a movement there. It is the sign of living water. So whenever we want to understand the Spirit of truth, it has got to have an action with it. It is nothing about sitting back just soaking it in. Because Paul, as Paul said, the Spirit has been poured into our heart. Wonderful thing. It means, okay, it just means I can start to understand, and in my own life, when you drive down the coast, you see all those burnt out trees that were there, and now they've got all this green life coming around them all again. That's what has to be happening in Lent. You'll see our Advent and our Lenten tree is starting to bloom again. You'll see that it's getting greener and greener. That's what's got to happen with us. It is the result of the living water making us active and alive. If that's not happening, we're probably stagnant. So I encourage all of us, individually and together, to become active, to become signs of living water. And that will inspire others to look at us and say, those who say that they're thirsty, and they say, that person, what they've got in their life, can quench my thirst.